The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It is Tuesday, February 8th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Great show for you today, folks. We have Stephen Elliott, the co-author of the new novel, Donald, which got a fantastic review in the Washington Post today. It is out today. Do not tell me that we do not get A-level guests on this program, ladies and gentlemen. We were offered up either Donald Rumsfeld or Stephen Elliott. Both of them have books coming out today about Donald Rumsfeld in some fashion. And we said, oh, that's easy. Stephen Elliott, please. And we will be talking to him very shortly. Just a reminder, we will be sequestering the post show on Tuesday the 15th or Wednesday the 16th, starting at that day. So you want to become a Majority Report member today, ladies and gentlemen, so you don't get, nothing gets mixed up in the shuffle. So now you get a 40-minute program plus the post show for free. In the future, you will just get that 40 minutes, which in and of itself is a huge, huge deal anyways. And speaking of huge deals, justcoffee.coop, go there, buy some coffee, buy some tea, buy some chocolate, put Majority in the coupon code box, get 10% off, and we get a couple of coins from that as well. Also, you can donate your Twitter account for one tweet a day, a week, or a month at donateyouraccount.com/majorityfm. And also, we have a Amazon link now. If you head to Majority FM, you can find the search box down on the majority.fm page. Click through that link to Amazon and then bookmark that link. And every time you go to Amazon, just do it via that link. You won't notice a difference. The only difference you will notice is that I am getting richer. So much money. So many cents I receive when you purchase something. And that goes to making this program even better. Quick update on what's going on in Egypt at this moment. Protests continue. But I mentioned yesterday that it was unclear what the status of Wael Ghanem was. He is the Google executive, and we're learning more about him, or I'm learning more about him, I should say, and I am telling you about it. He was the Google executive who basically disappeared on January 25th, and he was appointed by the April 6th movement, and now this story is fleshed out a little bit for me. He was one of these guys involved in building a Facebook page for the April 6th youth movement, which was essentially a fan group of 70,000, mostly young and educated Egyptians, who began to protest for their rights in Egypt a year ago. And I'll tell you something. Malcolm Gladwell right now, who wrote this treatise several months ago, suggesting that these revolutions, that Twitter and Facebook and social networking are meaningless in terms of these revolutions, I think he's probably reevaluating that premise right now. And if he sees this interview with Wael Ghanem on Egyptian TV, he will be incredibly, I think, impressed, as I was. Now, I want to play you 20 seconds of this interview, And then I'm going to explain to you why we're not going to play you the rest of it.
دي ثورة شباب الانترنت دي ثورة شباب الانترنت اللي بقت بعد كده ثورة شباب مصر اللي بعد كده بقت ثورة كل مصر ومفيش بطل فيها ومفيش واحد هو اللي المفروض ياخد السين كلنا كنا أبطال بس دي أول حاجة
وائل أولا أنا عارفة أن أنت لسه جاي أنت يعني عايز أقول لك بس أن
okay.
أنت
وقت obviously not in English. Wait, is it Farsi or Arabic? What?
Sounds like Arabic to me. But.
Okay. And but he's being interviewed. He's just been let out of prison. He was in there for 12 hours. I mean, excuse me, 12 days, blindfolded, apparently, the whole time. But he said he was treated actually fairly well, all things considered. In this interview, he had not slept in about 48 hours. And if you go, we will link to this page at juancole.com, and maybe we'll put the one part of the video up on our page at majority.fm. The interview is there, and it has English translations that you can read. So I've written down a couple excerpts. Very important. He said, "We're the youth that loves Egypt, and we did this because we love Egypt. Our first call is that we have rights which can never be claimed by destroying property." He goes on to say, "I was not a hero. I was just a guy typing in on a computer and building this community. And I desperately wanted to be with the people on the streets. Those people are the heroes." He came back from the UAE. I guess he lived in the Arab Emirates and had tricked Google, told him he was taking some personal time to visit a sick relative. Went back to Egypt when the protests start on the 25th because he's been intimately involved in building this Facebook page. And he apparently is not the administrator, according to him. But there has been an ongoing protest. And he said, "Look, I'm rich. I could have been sitting by my pool and watching this happening. We are not looking for anything. We're looking just for our rights." And apparently, while he was in prison, they were accusing him of being a traitor. And he said, "You know, after a while, I was able to convince them that I wasn't a traitor. I was doing this because I love Egypt." And this is what he said. "At first, the revolution belonged to the internet youth. Then the revolution belonged to the Egyptian youth. And then to all of Egypt." This guy has just come out of prison for 12 days. Certainly thinks that this revolution started online through Facebook. There's going to be an amazing story for someone to tell about this. And it does, as far as I can tell, there's no one who is out there that I'm reading, at least in the English press. And granted, I have, the range in which I read these things is relatively limited. But I haven't read anybody who was talking about this concurrent to what was happening. You know, Juan Cole, in the beginning of his predictions for this year, said, you know, keep an eye on Egypt because Mubarak is aging and Gamal Mubarak may replace him. But there was nobody who was saying it. Are you watching what's going on online here? And I think, frankly, part of that is because what happens on Twitter or Facebook is largely derided and scoffed at by academia, by the establishment. We saw when WikiLeaks came out, and I should say, I was on Dylan Radigan's program yesterday talking about the revelation that the British government, in fact, traded the release of that Lockerbie bomber back to Libya so that BP could get oil rights in Libya. And we know this because of WikiLeaks. And so there is something that's happening online with, and particularly the younger generation, that is going to have, I think, incredible implications. for societies like Egypt, and already has. He said he was treated very well, and he considers this a revolution that started on Facebook. And I think it's hard to argue with him. Meanwhile, the U.S. envoy to Egypt, Frank Wisner, apparently has some arguable conflict of interest. You know, it was known that Wisner was sort of had some personal relationships with Mubarak, which in some respects makes sense. If the U.S. government is trying to get this guy to leave and not have it be a bloody revolution, you want to send someone over there who is has a relationship with Mubarak and say, hey, buddy, time to take a powder. Hit the showers. Unfortunately, and I guess apparently he caused quite a row over the weekend when he was at the Munich Security Conference and said that Mubarak must stay in office to steer the democratic changes through. Wisner's comments were quickly rebuked by the Obama administration, reports Think Progress, and said that he was speaking as a private citizen, not as a diplomatic envoy. But the UK's independent Robert Fisk has found what some would consider a major conflict of interest. Wisner works for Patton Boggs, a New York D.C. law firm that includes in its client list none other than the Egyptian government itself. Patton Boggs even took part in litigation against Americans on behalf of the Egyptian government. Patton Boggs openly boasts that it advises the Egyptian military, the Egyptian Economic Development Agency, and has handled arbitrations and litigations on the Mubarak government's behalf in Europe and the U.S. Maybe somebody doesn't want to lose a client. I would rather a guy who has a personal relationship with him than an economic relationship, a financial relationship. That's somewhat problematic. No one likes to lose cash, folks. Believe me. Believe me, I know this very well. So that's what we have for Egypt at the moment. We will have a guest on later this week, I believe, to discuss. People have taken over the street with People's Assembly building. Some may sleep here. This is all happening in real time in Egypt, in Tahrir Square. I know I haven't been pronouncing it properly, but believe me, I can't pronounce English properly. Some quick hits before we go to Stephen Elliott. A lot happening. The DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, Committee, whatever it is, has sadly about to shutter its doors. And that's applause. Thank you.
Did you read Perrine's post over the War Room about it?
No, I didn't. What did Perrine say?
It's fun.
I imagine. But, you know, sadly, and of course the so-called centrist Democratic Leadership Council. No, this was a corporatist entity. This was a corporatist entity. This was not... The political ideology came second. It was developed expressly and explicitly for the purposes of bringing more corporate money into the Democratic Party. Well, congratulations, you succeeded. Bill Clinton, former chair of this committee, you succeeded. So in some respects, it is become obsolete because its main mission was successful. Its raison d'être, as we would say, as sitting around a French cafe, enjoying a cup of demi-tasse. I guess it's not a cup of demi-tasse. It's a demi-tasse, isn't it? Whatever. Come on, give me a break, people. So it lives on in things like the Progressive Policy Institute, PPI. Will Marshall, who co-founded the DLC, has set up. And, you know, things like the Third Way. Third Way has a slightly different... tactical posture, but in the end, it's the same thing. Jane Harman announces today that she will be quitting Congress. to become the president, CEO of the Woodrow Wilson Center. Rather strange. You'll remember Jane Harman as being the one who said the New York Times shouldn't be publishing that the U.S. government is spying illegally on Americans, even though it's spying illegally on Americans. So good riddance. We'll get a she is also a blue dog. We'll be getting someone in there, hopefully is to the left of her. It's California, after all. There is no more Republican Party there. And one has to wonder, you know, it's not like these are six-year terms. It's she got another 18 months. One has to wonder why she's leaving. What do we, are we in a countdown situation to some discrepancy about her finances coming out?
There was a good article again at the War Room. Kornacki, he said something about how she crossed Pelosi early on, like around 2006.
Oh, yes.
And that was basically, she was, that was her downfall.
Well, she crossed really Pelosi going. Before then, and Pelosi has always hated Harmon. And in fact, I think when it came time for the Intelligence Committee seniority, I think she either got her out or was looking to get her out.
Well, and I guess they were allies a long time ago, and she got her in over some Black caucus members, which kind of pissed off some people in the party, but she was, that's how tight they were. And then around Iraq, you know, a little bit before that, that's when things started falling apart.
But she knew this 6 months ago too, Chief. Well, that's the thing. When someone resigns in this way, you know, to go to a think tank? Wow, there'll be no opportunity for me to go to a think tank. Are you kidding? I don't know. That sounds a little bit dicey to me, but I guess we'll see. Senator Rand Paul, author of an aggressive bill to slash $500 billion from discretionary spending.
I don't think so.
And came out and said, in one fell swoop, we're going to fix Social Security for 75 years, Rand Paul said on Tuesday on MSNBC. If by fix he means neuter or castrate in the way one might an animal, spade them or whatever it's called, I believe him. The Tea Party Republican hinted at a centerpiece of his proposal would be raising the retirement age, though he did not specify. I hope that's true, because if he comes out with raising the retirement age, that's going to help us defeat that proposal. And finally, vacancies levels for federal judiciary are reaching a crisis point, as reported by Washington Post. Federal judges have been retiring at a rate of one per week this year, driving up vacancies that have nearly doubled since Obama took office. The departures are increasing workloads dramatically and delaying trials in some of the nation's federal courts. Experts blame Republican delaying tactics, slow White House nominations, and a dysfunctional Senate confirmation system. Of course, this system worked for other presidents, but no one's willing to really call out what it is exclusively. This is Republican, not just delaying tactics, obstruction. They're destroying the Senate. And it's incredibly offensive and dysfunctional for our country. But when have Republicans ever cared about that? Meanwhile, Democrats care about it, sadly, it seems, more and more to as a means in which to enrich their corporate cronies. But hope springs eternal, Facebook, and I'm not kidding about that. I think we should all be inspired by what's happening in Egypt. Future could be brighter than we expect, and it's going to be very bright when we return with author Stephen Elliott. We'll be right back after this. All right, we are back on the phone. Author, luminary, screenwriter, Stephen Elliott. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Hey, Sam. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Now, let's go through the books that you – I don't have – you. Life Without Consequences, right? Adderall Diaries.
True. Yeah, I wrote that one.
What was – I can't remember that, but it was my, one of my favorite books of
– Looking Forward to It.
Right, Looking Forward to It. And that, I think, was the first book that we interviewed you about on the old Majority Report. MR1, as we're calling it here.
Yeah, yeah. That was the – that was those studios were so whack. I mean, you really stepped it up, I think, with this new place.
Oh, yes. Yes, exactly. It's actually we actually have an ability to have a remote studio now. We don't just have one studio. We remote studios. So, Donald, I read a little bit of that review in the Washington Post. Glowing.
Yeah, we got a crazy review in the Washington Post this morning. You know, the book came out today. And also Donald Rumsfeld's memoir came out today.
Now, let me ask you about this. Do you think Donald Rumsfeld decided to release his book on the day that you are releasing Donald, which uses a fictionalized Donald Rumsfeld as his main character? Do you think he did this as a way to ride your publicity on this book?
I think it's possible. It's pretty smart marketing on his part. If he did, I got to commend him for it. He's not a dumb guy.
He's not a dumb guy. Now, all right, tell us about this book, because Rumsfeld's come out with his memoir today, which is, I think, about like 800 pages long. I think he did that just so the people wouldn't actually read it. And he came out with his 800-page long book where he said, you know, Iraq war was a public relations error and et cetera, et cetera. It sounds boring to me. It's just we heard him lie for years. There's no need for that now. But in Donald, which was written by yourself and Eric Martin, Rumsfeld is your protagonist. Tell us what happens to Rumsfeld.
So what happens is you have Donald Rumsfeld. This is originally this idea I had that, you know, what if Donald Rumsfeld was stuck in his own system? What if some people came in the middle of the night, abducted him against his will, didn't tell him what he was charged with, you know, strip him down, put him in diapers, shoot him up with some drugs. He wakes up, he's in a cargo plane, he's being rendered to a military base in the middle of a desert. I mean, these are actually things that we've done to other people. I mean, in fact, everything that happens to Donald in this book, in Bagram and then Guantanamo, are things that have happened to other people stuck in our system, people that we have found innocent and then later released, in fact. And so here you have Donald Rumsfeld, who we see as a guy with, you know, an enormous intellect, actually, and actually a pretty original thinker, which is why he's so much more interesting than like a George Bush or a Dick Cheney. You know, he's a very smart guy. And so you have this guy heaving this enormous intellect at a problem that he created, an insolvable problem that he created. And as he's tortured and as time passes and you see him start to lose his mind. And I think, you know, the point is, of course, to get across the idea of these things that we're doing to other people. A lot of times it's easier to show something through fiction than it is through nonfiction, because you can get into the emotional complexities.
I mean, I hear that, and you know, it's interesting. You know, this is coming in the wake of an Afghan who, a 48-year-old Afghan detainee who has been in Guantanamo for 8 years, or I guess 9 years, was being held there indefinitely without being tried. Died of a heart attack after all this time. It's also coming at a time where we hear more about who was the chief receiver, I guess, of our extraordinarily rendered people that we sent to Egypt, now vice president of Egypt, Suleiman.
That's really interesting about Egypt. You know what really struck me is how the other day, you know, they just let the guy out, but the guy, the marketing executive from Google,
right?
They had him in the prison, And everybody was saying, don't torture him. Don't torture him. Because it's that well known that everybody that enters prison in Egypt gets tortured. It's like a given, you know. So nobody even thinks about it. And it's exactly the point we're making, that once you start torturing people, you know, first you use it on your enemies, then you use it on your friends. You know, and that is the thing, is once you say it's okay to torture, you can't stop it. And eventually people that you didn't mean to get caught in that net, those people eventually get caught in the net. You know, you see it in France during the terror, where all the architects of the terror end up getting beheaded by their own system. And we'll see it in America. We're gonna, when we start torturing people and holding people without charges because they're, you know, quote unquote terrorists.
Now the book is from Rumsfeld's perspective. He's retired now and just hanging out, living the good life. How do you have a sense of like that you create this Rumsfeldian character? Is it from?
It's interesting. I mean, I think initially people hear about the book and they think it's like a revenge fantasy. It's like, yeah, that guy tortured people, now we're going to torture him. But that's actually not what it is at all. You know, you create a three-dimensional human being. I mean, this is a person who, while we strongly disagree with his policies and we think that he's created some horrendous things that have really contributed to the decline of America's values, he's still a person capable of love. He's a man. He probably loves his family. He's capable of regret. And, you know, most people are not evil. People make bad decisions. Some people make horrendously bad decisions. I'm not talking about Dick Cheney here, but most other people are not actually evil. You know, I don't think Donald Rumsfeld is actually an evil person. And so we treat him as a very intelligent, you know, we had a team of researchers, you know, on this book, because we had all the McSweeney's interns, and these kids are great, you know, they're all on their you know, break from Yale and Harvard, and it's all these best kids, you know, working over at McSweeney's for nothing. So we had all the real information, but you create this character, and when you torture somebody and it's a real human being, that character becomes sympathetic, which is actually another problem with the way we treat our detainees, is we take some of these people, the really bad guys who really want to do these horrible things, and we make them sympathetic. If not to us, then to other people that might have been aligned with us in the Arab world. And that's just a natural reaction. And one of the things we're trying to show is, you know, look, here's what it looks like. It's sometimes easier for people to relate when it's one of their own. So it's easier, we think, for white males to understand torture when they see a white male being tortured.
You know, it would be so awesome if your book outsold Rumsfeld's.
Yeah, we're off to a good start.
It would just be hilarious. It would be great to out.
We really would hope is that some big talk show would invite both of us on so that we could be on the show with Donald Rumsfeld. You know, we could talk about all this stuff. I actually think that he would like the book. I think that the book treats him very respectfully.
Did you guys send him a copy?
Yeah, of course.
And did you hear anything back?
We haven't heard anything back.
Do you invite him to your reading? You're doing a reading tonight in New York City at Pianos. Did you invite him?
That's right. And he is in New York right now. He was on the Today Show this morning, and he is more than invited. And in fact, he's not just invited. We would give him 15 minutes to read. We would give him equal time to read from his book if he were to show up.
That is incredibly generous of you.
Yeah, yeah, equal time. We don't want to have an argument. We want to have a discussion.
Now, are you still doing Lit Pack?
No, we haven't. We stopped doing that after 2008. We were doing a bunch of literary fundraisers for various progressive candidates, you know. And we did the last final big one for Obama. And I started this online magazine, The Rumpus, and so a lot of the fundraising efforts I have to go to keeping that alive.
Right.
You know, because we do a lot of, we have to update the site like 15 times a day.
The Rumpus, and people can go to that at therumpus.org, correct?
Therumpus.net.
.net. Sorry about that.
Yeah, therumpus.net.
So also tell me, there's been, since the last time I spoke to you, there's been a lot of success for the Adderall Diaries.
The Adderall Diaries is doing really well. It keeps kind of growing. You know, James Franco bought the rights to the book, and he's also buying the rights to my novel, Happy Baby. But then I wrote the script for the Adderall Diaries. And Franco and his people liked the script. And so then I wrote another script, an original script with my friend Lorelei. We wrote this script together. And now I'm going to direct that one. And so
Wow. Awesome.
It's a whole new thing, just cranking out scripts. You know, it's really fun. But the Adderall Diaries is doing really well.
Do you think this Donald thing could ever be something that you would ever shoot?
I think it'd be a great movie, you know, because it's really a Kafka story. I mean, it's a guy stuck in a prison system who, you know, there's moments, you know, where he's being interrogated for days on end. And then they're asking him things like, you know, are there any attacks on American cities, you know, that you want to tell us about that have been planned? And he's saying to them, do you know how long I've been here? I mean, this is after he's already been in captivity for 6 months, you know, or a year, which is, of course, exactly what we do to the people in Guantanamo. You know, and he says, you know, do you know how long I've been here? So it's this kind of maddening thing. It's, you know, they're saying, you don't ask the questions. We ask the questions. And so it's just this kind of this guy caught in this terrific maze. But then he sees, you know, he might see some military guy doing, you know, just really on his game, you know, and he still feels a certain pride in that and seeing these guys doing their job. But he's stuck. He's stuck in this impossible situation. It's very Kafkaesque. I think it could be a great movie and it's a great parable.
Do you think you got any insight in the course of writing this book as to what Rumsfeld was thinking in his capacity as a torturer? I mean,
I think it's that ends justify the means thing. You know, it's actually, you know, I was talking to Nick Flynn, who wrote a great book about torture called The Ticking is the Bomb. And we were talking about that ticking bomb scenario, which is what most of the torture is based on. Most of the reasoning behind these torture policies that you need to get the information quickly, you know. And what Nick pointed out, you know, is that he used to be an alcoholic and he would drive drunk. But even when he was driving drunk, he didn't think that it should be legal, you know. And similarly, you know, if you got to save an American city from being nuked or something, you know, or some massive terrorist attack, and you have to torture somebody to stop this event from happening, then you should be able to defend your actions in a court of law. You know, that doesn't, right. you shouldn't have to make it legal, because if it's actually justified, you will be able to convince a jury of that, of the need for the exception this one time to do what you did. You know, you don't want to make things legal just because you think you might have to do them one day.
Right. I mean, that's always been the point, is that, you know, the ticking time bomb scenario, because that if that comes up, you know, undoubtedly we have tortured in the past. The issue is not so much that that's being done in any given circumstance, although it is incredibly reprehensible. It's the idea that you're going to make it legal, that you're going to take the abhorrent and make it legal. You're going to
Sure. If somebody kidnaps your daughter, and you've got this guy, and he's kidnapped your daughter, and you want to know where your daughter is, you know, and you've got him tied to a chair, you know, and you're thinking, you know, you're going to stab him or something, you don't need it to be legal.
Right.
You'll still do it. And then you will go and you will plead your case.
So did you get a sense? I mean, in the course of doing this, like what Rumsfeld was thinking?
I tell you, the most interesting thing he said in his memoir, which just also came out today, is that he said his biggest regret is that he didn't go to Congress. You know, he wished that he had gone to Congress to get approval to torture, as opposed to going through the courts and the executive branch. You know, and what he really is saying is, I wish I had gone to the people and gotten them to sign off on this.
Right.
You know, and that's pretty interesting, because what he's saying is that he thinks the people would have signed off on it. And that's pretty scary to me, but you know, he might be right. And it's just a slippery slope. Once you say one thing's okay, then something else is okay, and soon we all just think it's okay. We forget that there was a time when we didn't think it was okay to torture in America.
Stephen Elliott, his latest book is Donald. It is out in stores today and on Amazon. Go buy it. Make this book. And we'll have it on our site at majority.fm. You can buy it through our Amazon Associates program. And he's doing a reading tonight at Pianos in New York City. Check out therumpus.net on a daily basis, because apparently they update it like six times a day.
More. Bet.
Stephen, thanks so much for joining us.
Sam, thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. A couple more minutes here. Interesting story on earmarks. Well, let's start with this. Obama went to the Chamber of Commerce yesterday, and I was on Dylan Radigan's show talking about that yesterday as well. I know I forgot to tweet it, and I forgot to tell everybody. All right? I'm juggling a lot of things here, folks. And Obama goes in front of the Chamber of Commerce and basically says, hey, listen, you know, I know we've had our problems and our differences, but please, please do something with that $2 trillion that you're sitting on and hire new people.
I don't think so.
Obama knows that is meaningless. That's meaningless. This is a gesture just for, I don't know, you know, your parents, essentially. Your semi-right-wing parents who are somewhat conservative, who have actually bought into the idea that he's a socialist. This whole thing was just for them. But Matt Iglesias has a good point. At a speech before the U.S. Chamber of Commerce today, Obama tried to affiliate himself with rich businessmen and touted his commitment to innovation and entrepreneurship. Obama says, as a country, we have a responsibility to encourage American innovation. We're reforming our patent system so innovations can move quickly to market. Steve Case is heading up a new partnership called Startup America to help entrepreneurs turn new ideas into new businesses and jobs. And Iglesias makes the point that while, you know, I love businessmen and I love entrepreneurship and innovation work well if you're trying to prove to everybody that you're not a renegade Maoist or some type of crazy socialist. But in fact, they are two different things. Egypt has been stagnating for 20 years, but Iglesias makes the point that surely in 1990, Egyptian businessmen found that he's had a good time of it. It's the very things that make the Egyptian economy uninnovative and uncompetitive and unentrepreneurial and undynamic make it a comfortable place to be an incumbent businessman. Of course. And Iglesias makes the point that the Chamber of Commerce is full of existing big business. And the last thing they want is the free market to function in a way that would allow for innovation and entrepreneurship by new entities. Those are the firms that are going to win the future, these new entities. Look at the... Can you give some examples? Cable versus television networks, Hulu as opposed to cable, internet for business, for newspapers, and so on and so on. And he says they'll gladly accept handouts for their own research and development, but they don't want it out there for everyone. They don't want that competition. And speaking of regulation, Daryl Issa, as reported by Timothy Noah at Slate. Darrell Issa, you remember he put out a call to businesses to ask what regulations are bothersome to you? And Tim Noah makes the argument that, well, they should all be. That's what regulations are for. Darrell Issa received almost 2,000 pages of replies from businesses. Good. I hope he has to read every single one of those pages. And Noah takes us through the regulatory system. First comes a proposed rule, which is published in the Federal Register. Then the public is invited to comment on the proposal and how it should be changed. But he points out that the public in this instance is almost always and nearly exclusively business interests, which provide the overwhelming majority of comments on proposed regulations. The federal agency in question reviews the criticisms from businesses and makes whatever adjustments it deems necessary. Then the White House has another mechanism in which to sort of criticize these regulations through the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs, currently administrated by Cass Sunstein. By no means a screaming regulator. They write an opinion. Then the agency issues a final rule. If the government issues a regulation that businesses don't like, it isn't because the government failed to consider how it would affect business. It's because it weighed the arguments from business and found them wanting. With very little input and anybody, frankly, arguing on behalf of those constituencies that would say this is why we need it. Occasionally you get narrow consumer groups or narrow interests, but very few who are making broader, holistic arguments that carry any weight. Business dominates the regulatory process so thoroughly, even in Democratic administrations, he writes, that it's hard to escape the suspicion that Darrell Issa's real purpose in soliciting business opinion was to elicit contributions to his campaign committee or to his two leadership political action committees. But he's saying, but assuming you take Issa at his face value, that he's actually been sincere, should we care about business complaints about burdensome regulation? Noah says no. By definition, a regulation is a government requirement that businesses uphold responsibilities to the public at large, that left on its own devices, businesses would rather avoid. Of course. Which is why Obama going to the Chamber of Commerce and saying, please hire people with all your profits, is ludicrous. These companies have a fiscal responsibility to their shareholders, and that's all they care about. They don't care. If it was not illegal to put lead in candy for kids, they would do it. And if the Republicans have their way, there'll be no FDA to which to determine where that lead came from. And if you're a free market libertarian, you will say, well, people will learn not to buy candy from that company that uses lead in their candy. Really? And how will that happen? By the time the kid has neurological disorder, you're going to be able to figure it out that it was because he ate this type of candy? Of course not. Of course not. These regulations are to protect our environment, our health, our air, our water, and our society. It is ours, and government is our vehicle to make sure that our ownership of these commons are protected, period. And we cannot rely on business to do anything for our society unless it happens to be in their best interests. There are moments where those two things run parallel to each other. And that's good. Society's interests and business interests. But there's many times where business interests conflict with society's interest. And that's why we have regulation. And that's why the answer to getting us out of this economic malaise is not more tax cuts for these corporations. Because if they needed more tax cuts to create jobs, we wouldn't be sitting there asking them to take the piles of money they're sitting on and create jobs. And to the extent that these regulations, Noah writes, end up creating or conflicting with businesses more than they should, you've got millions upon millions of dollars, $132 million, by the U.S. Chamber alone last year on lobbying. They have a voice. They don't need to write a letter to Daryl Issa. It's all a show. And he points out that the problem with regulation is when businesses like it. That's when you're going to lose. That's when it's bad for consumers. You know, like licensing shampoo specialists or masseuses or locksmiths. All done on the state level, but the dirty secret is that the business loves this stuff because it means they can charge more money for the exact same service. So don't be fooled by that, of course. We're going to take a break. I will take your IMs on the B-side, members-only show. Not for members-only right now, but soon the Majority Report B-side. You will be beside yourself if you know. Working on a tagline for that. So become a member within a week or so. If you have not become a member, your show will end here. But in a week or so, if you are a member, you will get to hear the story I have about earmarks. And you will get to hear IMs. And sometimes you'll get to hear special bonus interviews. More and more. So please become a member. And again, if you cannot afford to become a member, send me an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We'll work something out. Also, Just Coffee at justcoffee.coop. When you go and buy Donald today, Stephen Elliott's book, do it through our link at majority.fm. And then when you get to Amazon, just click on the Amazon button in that little search box and then bookmark that link. And then start your search there. And always, when you go to Amazon, do it that way, and you'll be supporting the show. And don't forget, you can donate your Twitter account to us one time a week, a day, or a month at donateyouraccount.com/majorityfm. All right, we'll be right back after this. Is that the Jimi Hendrix?
Yeah, it's La Poupée.
Nice. I love it. All right, folks, you can IM me at Majority FM, of course, as you always can. A great story in the New York Times about earmarks. As you know, the Republicans have been screaming about earmarks, want to get rid of them. President Obama, in his bid to sound not like a socialist, apparently has decided also, so there's no earmarks. Gone are the likes of earmarks. And putting a huge, huge, huge cut on our budget. As you know, earmarks account for less than half of 1% of total federal spending. 0.5% of total federal spending. Wow. Can't you just see our economy exploding with activity now? Because things like a project to help consolidate information about warrants in Brazos County, Texas, will now receive no funding. Staffing for two new shelters for abused women and children in Salt Lake City will not will not get funding. A rural Wisconsin county will not be able to upgrade its communication system, and a road in Kentucky will not be widened next year. You know, folks, the stupidity of this whole earmark thing can only be expressed by the fact that John McCain has dedicated his career to harping about it. That's the only way you know it is a total bullshit. Yes, there are projects that are wasteful, but it's an incredibly important instrument for helping local communities. And you know who's going to find that out soon? Those Republican douchebags who were so up in arms, these Tea Partiers. Yeah, we went over that story about was it Suffolk County?
I think so, yeah.
Where it basically had to be taken over by the courts.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
The teabagger who became the whatever it is that you're in charge of a county, he's like, oh, we're cutting taxes. Of course, couldn't figure out where to cut any services because conservative governance doesn't work. And so all that happens is you basically sink, you know, counties can default. And so it had to be taken over. These people are—they're morons. They're not serious individuals. They have no philosophy from which to govern. Steve Tribble, county judge executive of Christian County in Kentucky. I guess that's really a county. I do agree we have to cut from somewhere, he said. But I'm against some earmarks, he said, but not the good ones. I can promise you, this is not a road to nowhere.
Hey, what happened?
Don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
I was actually going
back. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise. I'm just against the bad earmarks, like the ones that other people are getting. The ones that I'm getting are good ones. I'm firmly principled against other people getting earmarks. Representative Sean Duffy, Republican of Wisconsin, who devoted part of his 2010 campaign to criticizing the penchant of his predecessor, David Obey, for securing earmarks, said he traveled to his district last week to gently explain to local governments that times have changed. But even Mr. Duffy said that he'd come to see that not every earmark was of the much maligned teapot museum quality.
Hey, what happened?
I'm against earmarks unless they're good ones. In other words, ones that I'm getting. Said that he would help his constituents work through the grant process. Where are you getting those grants from? Oh, the federal government. I'm against earmarks unless it's a good one for me.
Hey, what happened?
But there's the rub. With President Obama proposing a 5-year freeze on domestic spending and the Republican-controlled House vowing to cut spending in federal agencies by hundreds of millions of dollars, it's almost certain that every agency will have far less money to spend on thousands of legitimate projects that were approved after extensive review. The result, scores of lawmakers are going to find themselves explaining to people back home why their bridges will not be finished, their rape victim programs canceled before they started, their federal requirements ignored. As Miss Fitzgerald said of Miss Duffy, Mr. Duffy, he's definitely going to hear from us. So what are localities going to do to make up the difference? They're going to raise your property taxes. We can get all these services without having to pay for it and cut government so that bondholders will make a lot of money. We'll be able to cut government and never have to pay back for Social Security. We'll never have to pay taxes again. Free market.
Come with me and you'll be in a world of your.
This is the libertarian theme song. You know, I go on that Radigan show a lot of times with Tim Carney, who is with the Washington Examiner. He apparently went to that Koch brothers thing in Palm Springs. He's written some pieces about it. I haven't read it yet. Very nice guy. Very nice guy. And like I say about all libertarians, you cannot find two libertarians who, if you ask them about their policies and talk to them for more than 4 minutes, 3 minutes, will agree with another libertarian. They all love a overarching rubric of libertarianism, but it's meaningless. Because being a libertarian simply means I am going to draw the line in terms of what government should do based upon what my biases are and say that's a principle. Rather than admitting that we all draw the line somewhere. And that we need to actually justify these not based on principle, but on results. This is the classic debate between things like realist movements and classical movements. You see this in the law, where legal critical realist legal thinkers say we have to look at the implications of a law and use that as part of the arguments. Because if we don't look at results in any way, we're just operating in a fantasy world of in a vacuum. And classicists will say, no, that's wrong. We shouldn't look at the results of the law or the implications of a law or what effects it will have. Which, of course, is bullshit. Because the way that they formulate their arguments in the first place is that they do that formulation of what will happen if this law passes. And then they just simply pretend we never had that conversation. So that's how you can have Scalia and Thomas vote to stop the counting in Florida. Oh, we don't want to prejudice against about George Bush. And we want George Bush to win. But we're not considering that. Well, of course they are. And it's the same with libertarianism. And, you know, Carney is like, well, you know, libertarians don't understand that property rights are, as soon as the government gets involved in securing property rights, then there really is no free market. But we should start a free market after that. And I'm like, well, but where, how far after that? You know, the roads? Constitution only says post roads. So as long as we're delivering the mail, we don't need massive highways. But we need it for trucks. We need it for commerce. No free market there. Right? I mean, because government stepping in and providing what is needed and to transport workers. To whose benefit is this? What if our society was completely structured in a different way? What if business interests weren't able to give us roads? What if business interests didn't have the power to overcome the business interests of the trains? Or what if trains were all nationalized? And we didn't have this huge highway infrastructure, which is all for the sake of commerce. I mean, it goes on and on like this. Let's go to the IMs. Harold, you were great on Radigan yesterday. Oh, thank you, Harold. Nefertiti, good morning. Upbeat Nihilist, how about the Mark Green Room for After Show? That's pretty good.
That is pretty good.
You're now entering the Mark Green Room. Zach Punk, I just listened to Mark's interview with Dave Foley yesterday. It was amazing. You guys have to bury the hatchet. This whole thing is just sad. I know he's sponsored by Pro Flowers. I think you should send him some. I heard that Dave Foley interview. That was great. What hatchet? Look, I named my mic after him, the Marin. We just need to find out if that's okay with she who gave us the mic. See, wait a second. Did she respond? Huh? I've not heard. I assume it's a she, but I don't know for sure. The reason why the show sounds good today is because sounds so good today because of the Marin. I'm speaking into the Marin.
It's got a ring to it. I like that.
I don't have a problem with Marin. He said he would come on the show 3 or 4 months ago and just hasn't had 15 minutes. I mean, he's been very, very busy. So I don't have a problem with that. Kevin semicolon. Yes, I'm shocked Steven didn't mention my comics, which are available at therumpus.net. It must have slipped his mind. Yes, it's a very exciting day for him, Kevin. But yes, if you go to therumpus.net, you can also see longtime listener Kevin Semicolon's great comic stylings. Kev 117221, Nassau County, taken over by the state, right next door to Queens. Oh, it's Nassau, not Suffolk. Sorry. All apologies. Jimmy Riffercake, Sammy, good show. You mentioned FDA and regulations regarding libertarians. This is right, the wheelhouse of the reefer madness effect that I'm trying to help you understand. This is right in the wheelhouse. Why the hell would anyone trust the FDA to regulate our food when they have so clearly allowed the big business lobbies to control their behavior toward marijuana? Well, I think my argument would be that when you just keep marijuana off the market and, you know, that's also by statute, which is not a function of the FDA, but let's just assume it was. You keep marijuana off the market is different from allowing food that would make people to ingest that would kill them. The FDA comes under pressure when we have E. coli in our meat or not meats, that's the USDA. But if we have, you know, cyanide in our Tylenol, the FDA hears about it in a way that the absence of something doesn't cause the same pressure. So, you know, I understand your point, but here we go. We ready for this? Here's the Marin song.
Hey, Marin, come on the show, man, and talk about this song. Jimmy Riefercake says fucking with Gallagher was wrong. You fucked with Gallagher, man. Now what you gonna do? Come on the show. Sammy Cedar will talk about it with you. Those jokes would have been just fine if it was Lenny Bruce. Why don't you assholes just smoke a J and call a truce?
You know, the Chris Rosen one was better. The Chris Rosen one was better. First of all, I don't like all the profanity in it. It limits the amount that we can play it. The Chris Rosen one's better. I'm sorry. The Chris Rosen one's better. But, you know, like, they can't all be gems. If that was the case, then, you know, you probably, Jimmy, wouldn't even have the time to give us the ones that you give us. Because you'd be, the record contract would keep you from being able to do it. Avant, Oldman to Current TV. And Stephen Elliott's books are on the MR book and shop page. We're gonna set up a menu page for that, but right now we're linking through the front, through the post, right? Will you do that? Yes, Dorsey? Doing it. Are you doing other things? Wait, you're not talking to me today?
I'm going to do it.
All right. yes, Keith Oldman to Current TV. Dorsey, what was your comment?
Come on, buddy.
You can do two things at once. Don't look right. So put off.
It's three things, actually. No, I don't know. I was hoping that it would be more on the internet side.
Three things.
Four, maybe.
Okay, so good. You wanted to be more on the internet side?
Yeah, I mean, I understand, you know.
People are going to watch it on the internet, don't you think?
I'm just saying, move away from cable. That shouldn't be the focus anymore. I don't know. It's just like, it's going to go to the internet eventually anyway. I mean, would you rather watch current TV on the internet whenever you want, on your phone, blah, 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 streaming
but
live?
But these are not mutually exclusive things.
Well, would that let him get on air, so to speak, earlier because of the contract with MSNBC?
Well, look, I think he's probably he knows when he's going to be able to get on. It says later in 2011. I mean, it could be probably September would be my guess.
Well, I guess, I mean, does that restriction carry across for internet feeds as well?
No. My understanding is it doesn't, but and maybe he'll be doing it. But I think he's taking a property that's sort of like, it's reminiscent of me, it reminds me, I should say, of Howard Stern on Sirius. Coming in, getting equity, shaping the network in many respects, having total freedom. The difference is that Howard sequestered himself behind a paywall, and Oberman's not. And he will have access to 60 million homes, which is not a lot relative to MSNBC. I imagine MSNBC was probably double or so. But then it'll be online. And Current has some very bizarre programming. They don't seem to be doing their initial run of what they did. Now it's like sort of, I can't even figure it out. SWAT, like cops show.
That's kind of what I mean. I mean, it's like they're going to have Olbermann, and it's going to be surrounded by a bunch of, you know.
Well, no. That's your assumption. I would be shocked if they didn't build a format around this guy.
What I'm saying is they're starting from scratch. If you're going to start from scratch, you may as well go after something you can be number one at, which is the void that the Huffington Post has left. This is a perfect opportunity for somebody to fill that void for independent, you know, media.
Do you think that the Huffington Post is going to suffer a drop in viewership because they are owned by a corporate entity?
No, not so much, but...
So what void have they left?
The people who want to go there for news that's, you know, not secondhand breaking news and not nipple
galleries. How is that going to change? They're not going to change. Huffington Post, you're going to go to the Huffington Post, you're not going to see any difference.
I don't go to the Huffington Post anymore. What I'm saying is it's going to happen eventually where people are just like, oh, it's just, you know, another stop for aggregated news, you know, with a couple of bloggers who, you know, are pretty good. I like Sam Stein. I like, you know, a lot of the people there, Jason Lincoln's. But what I'm saying is it's like I don't go there looking for those blogs. You know, it's like I usually get there through Twitter or Facebook. You know, I don't go to the Huffington
Post.
My point
is, you say he should fill the void that Huffington Post is making. What void?
The void, like for a major blog on the left where you can have an aggregated independent news system.
But they're still going to do that.
Okay.
That was it.
They're going to be owned by AOL. They're not going to be able to say whatever they want, and people are going to know that.
Okay, that's a different argument. I'm not sure that's correct, but if that happens, that's true. But Olbermann's not there for writing. He's there to, you know, do the news, and so he's going to be in that medium, and eventually it will migrate there. I mean, look, if we had the opportunity to do this show on radio, okay, simulcast it. Do radio, take breaks, but keep our stream going. Exactly the same thing, except for it would do radio segments, and then during the breaks, I'd be on the Sammy Cam, I'd be on the audio stream. That would be the podcast. Or the free podcast would be those 40 minutes of a radio hour, and you know, then we would do an extra show afterwards, or whatever it is. We would have more clearance. We would have more authority. And when radio moves to all internet, in other words, your radios that you buy in your house, you can get an internet radio for $30. And your radio in your car comes factory equipped with an internet radio. It's all 4G. Then we're even better to make that transition.
Okay.
Dorsey, get out of here.
I'm just going
to pack up your stuff and go. Come on.
I'm just saying it's all going to be internet-based, computer-based, mobile-based, eventually.
Right, I mean, right.
Once everything...
I agree with you. But there's no reason now not to take the biggest piece of the pie you can get, where you can still maintain your independence. You know, my agent sent me an email, and he's like, why is he going to such a small platform? And I'm like, first of all, MSNBC is a pretty decent-sized platform, not that big. Well, no. What's another platform that you could go to? I mean, you're going to go to Fox?
It's only 20% less in viewership. Or it reaches 20% less.
Right, it has 20% less clearance. And what you're going to see by the time he gets to air is, I bet you that they are carried almost close to parity on MSNBC. MSNBC is basically carried mostly on the coasts and in bigger metropolitan areas. And I think you're going to see Current has probably a similar footprint, but will grow. And I think you're going to see online go up. And I don't know if anybody's gone and taken a look at the, you know, Media Bistro TV newser cable ratings. But there's an interesting trend happening at 8 p.m. And it's going to be interesting to see if that maintains. And I'm talking about on MSNBC is an interesting trend. Jay Shivo, I am so depressed. What is this, because of Marin? What? Why are you so depressed? Superfunk, Maddow did a good job lead piece last night of how the Republican-controlled House is doing nothing, again, literally nothing. No ideas, no agenda, nothing on the schedule except for more time off. It's pathetic. While they pretend they're doing things to create jobs, more light needs to be shed on this, or at least more ridicule. Indeed. I will get there, Superfunk. Is Current TV available on DirecTV? Answered own question. Yes, it is. Cool, 146. Current TV has SWAT shows? Sounds like he'd fit right in. The MSNBC Evening Pundit lineup is currently bizarrely followed by ridiculous prison shows. Anyway, I can't say I really care about Oldman getting another show. I can think of a lot of liberal commentators who deserve show more. Give Greenwald a show and I'd watch. Fair enough. Nefertiti, MSNBC is a pay channel for many cable systems, not basic cable. I didn't know that. Zach Punk, MSNBC is 85 million homes. So, you know, it's not much more. It certainly is not much more. What else do we have here? What else did I want to talk about today? I want to save that story for tomorrow. Where is that? Where did that piece of paper go? We had another Republican. There's a Republican in... here it is. Shocking. In that Bobby Franklin, some Georgia Republican state representative, just an absolute nut job. Absolute nut job. Has introduced a bill to change the state's criminal codes so that in criminal law and criminal procedure, in other words, in court, victims of rape, stalking, and family violence can only be referred to as accusers until the defendant has been convicted. Are you following this?
I think so. That's bizarre.
In other words, I steal your computer, Dorsey. You're not a theft victim until someone's been convicted. You're just a guy who's accusing someone or some unknown person of having stolen something of yours. It's... Now, I have an idea where this guy's going, but he's so freaking insane. He's like, it really tarnishes people to be... Well, that's a... You don't deal with the victim. Talking about it, the accused. they have to earn. You understand that if you are a victim of rape or stalking or family violence, in other words, if you're a woman, you do not get the role of victim until we find out who did it. Volume still low on the mic. Gain and normalize the final product so we don't have to crank the volume when listening. That I just got that email. But did you crank the volume today?
I cranked the volume today. The problem is still
peaking. You've got to do it in post.
Okay.
It's too soft in post. I heard it too. I think you would benefit greatly from a voice processor, which is a mic preamp with some basic processing built in. I'm thinking something like the 528E or the 230. It would make your voice much more even and symmetrical, and the perceived loudness would increase a lot, making it a better-sounding show. It's also a bit flat now. There's no real presence in the voice. Could be improved with the above mentioned. Thanks for a good show.
That's all true. Half of that is now that we have a new mic in line, we have to, you know, over the course of the next couple of days, fine-tune the EQ that was set for the last couple of mics. Also, part of it's just we're, you know, running on a rag and bone system a little bit.
That's right. There you go. Thank you for the email. Back to the IMs at Majority FM. Don't be a putz. Can you think of anything Obama has done that has not disproportionately benefited rich people over the rest of us? I can only think of cash for clunkers. Because rich people don't drive clunkers. That's true. I would also say the bailout of GM. Saved 2 million. The bailout of GM and Chrysler saved 2 million jobs of middle class people. Yeah, some rich, but I think proportionately, I think the bailout for GM. You know, income inequality is greater in the U.S. than it is in Egypt. Imagine if Americans had access to things like Twitter and Facebook so we could organize and change our government. I mean, why do people think that Americans don't seem to have an issue with it? I mean, has the right so successfully divorced our reality from what our government does? I think possibly. Cool, J146. Have you ever had Chris Hedges on a show? I would like him as a guest. We are actually been trying to get him as a guest for almost as long as Marin, except for he has a legitimate excuse. He does his writing in the mornings. And so we're going to have we're trying to schedule a pre-tape, which I don't particularly like pre-tapes, but I will do it for him. Matthew Gold. Oh. Not there. Nefer. MSNBC, okay, Bill Maher is going to be on O'Donnell tonight. Could make for interesting viewing if Maher holds him to being too inside the Beltway.
I don't think so.
It's an interesting attempt to get some ratings, though. And I think it'll work. Lawrence could use a little help in that regard. Why is that showing up like that? You can IM me at Majority FM for another couple of minutes, ladies and gentlemen. We may actually end a little bit early today. Wait, why is my computer not playing?
Try it again.
Jimmy Reefer Cake says fucking with... Hey, Marin, come on the show, man, and talk about this song. Jimmy Reefer Cake says fucking with Gallagher was wrong. You fucked with Gallagher, man. Now what you gonna do? Come on the show, Sammy Cedar will talk about it with you. Those jokes would have been
just
fine
did one take.
If it was Lenny Bruce.
Am I right?
Why don't you assholes just smoke a J?
Things in Tahrir Square right now, according to my Twitter feed, according to Ben Wiederman, definitely biggest crowd yet in Tahrir. It's got to be over a million people. And Sharif Kudus from Democracy Now! Said there seems to be a shift in public support towards Tahrir protesters. They are buoyant, many Egyptian flags waving. demonstrations and strikes across Egypt right now, according to the Ahram Online. Thousands of Luxor's unemployed and those affected by the impaired tourism sector gathered in front of the Labor Force Authority to register their names to seek compensation financial aid from the Ministry of Finance. Workers, the unemployed and angry, all took to the streets Tuesday to demand their rights and removal of the country's ruling regime. In the city of Suez, around 2,000 youths demonstrated to demand the chance to work. In Mahalla, more than 1,500 workers of Abu Sabal Company demonstrated this morning, cutting the road. More than 2,000 workers from the Sigma Pharmaceutical Company. Around 5,000 unemployed youths demonstrated this morning in front of Aswan Government Building, which they tried to storm. What am I hearing? Around in Kom Obo, around 1,000 protesters called for the president to stand down. It's interesting. And, you know, you're not reading there are Death to America flags, Death to Zionist flags. It's interesting. All right, we'll take one or two more here. Film Fest guy, would you pitch a show to current TV? The thought had crossed my mind. The thought had crossed my mind. Trip, changed all my Amazon bookmarks to your link. You'll be rich. Is it really a link for Bill Scher's book? It should go to FUBAR. Well, it doesn't have to be Bill Scher's book. You can find FUBAR through there. Crystal Count, Post Olbermann, John Stewart is making Ed Schultz his next over-the-top loudmouth lefty pundit target. I'm split. I actually can't watch Schultz partly for his style and prefer Jenks' online style over his TV one. In a sense, Stewart is critiquing the way TV fosters a high-volume format, and for that I agree. Still, what are they supposed to do? All be like Rachel? That's a good point. Maron went on Adam Carolla's show. Well, you know, I don't know. Make of that what you will, folks. Do you think all the added activity in Egypt is because of the news and the article I sent you? The bombings of the churches was found to be possibly tied to the interior minister? No, I read that. I don't. I'm not even sure if that wasn't an attempt to placate some of the protesters in some respect by showing we're throwing some of our former administration officials, you know, into prison. I actually think that this interview with Wael Ghanem, and we've linked to it right now.
Linked to, sorry.
The interview with Wael on Juan Cole's site, or check out that interview. We're going to post it on themajorityf.fm. And this was on national TV, and I think seeing this like 25-year-old kid, you know, break down and just cry because he's in, you know, because he loves Egypt so much. A guy who was living in total luxury and came back, just a kid who was on Facebook getting people to rally around the idea of democracy. I think it really, I mean, I was moved by it. And I'm not Egyptian. Zach Punk. Something Obama did that not benefit the rich over the rest of us? Ever hear this thing called the Affordable Care Act? I guess you could make the argument it benefits insurance companies, but I don't think that was the point. Well, I mean, I think you have a good point there, Zach. And if it works out, there is going to be 20 or 30 more million people who have health insurance. And, you know, it benefits a large industry as well. But I think that's a good point, Zach. I think that's a very good point. Jimmy Reeferkirk, shit, I just had to take a call for work. You're right, one take. You don't want your audience to know that, to be able to figure that out. All right, folks. Tomorrow on the program, not clear yet. Later in the week, don't remember. We'll get this down. It's only been 3 months, almost, coming up on our three-month anniversary. Folks, if you can become a Majority Report member, please do. And buy some coffee. Buy your Amazon material via our link at majority.fm. Donate your Tweety account. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place. I need to stick it out. I get somewhere the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somewhere I lost my drive. Between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking. But the man